Revolt Again, Alice Birch, running May 25th through June 16th. Maureen Porter, Josie Seed, and Jennifer Lanier, thank you so much for this engaging and lively talk. I could talk to you for hours.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah. So hear the show again at stageandstudio.org, kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Like us on facebook.com/stageletterandstudio. Tweet me at stageletterandstudio. Subscribe to the podcast at iTunes. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Let's go out with more music by Portland musician, composer Cynthia Stillman Gurtis. Find out more at cynthiastillmangurtis.com.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Support our beloved KBOO. Why? Because for 50 years, KBOO has stood by us, helped lift us up, give us a voice, amplified our voice. They have been beside us through thick and thin, through good times and not so good times. In short, they have been beside us as we have lived our lives. That is community radio. In truth, KBOO is really us, all of us. Whether you donate $5 a year or $5,000, or just listen, KBOO is a collective community fabric woven together. It's something to celebrate, to treasure, not just this year, but every year. It's something that every community deserves to have. Invest in the future by supporting us on Kickstarter today. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter, and thank you for your support of KBOO.
Andy Warhol looks at screen, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Hannah Piper Burns. She's a multimedia artist. Her show Venus Retrograde is on now at the Portland Art Museum through August the 12th. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thank you so much for having me.
This show is based on The Bachelor TV show, three brands of The Bachelor, and it's an installation in the Apex series, which is the contemporary Northwest section of the museum.
That's right. It's on the fourth floor. It's part of the Apex series. It's made of installation, sculpture, and text that's all based on and taken from the Bachelor franchise. So The Bachelor, Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise.
Right. So it's a thing where you're walking through. There are big stenciled slogans on the walls, and then there are videos to watch. And then there are areas with like furniture and other things you could sort of interact with.
That's right. It's a mix of video with sound and large site-specific text, and then also installation with ready-mades, including furniture.
Mm-hmm. So the first little section you come to as you walk in is called False Idylls. That's IDYLLS, the poetic, sort of, what is it? What is an idyll, really?
It's, when you're in an idyll, it's sort of like a leisure, a vacation. It's taken from to be idle, I-D-I-L-E, and it's a play on I-D-O-L.
Okay, false idols, right. Mm-hmm. So you've got this table, it's like a hall table with these two like air freshener things that squirt air freshener smell.
Yes, only one of them works at a time. because otherwise it would be kind of overpowering. But I couldn't decide which one I liked better, so I put them both on the pedestal. But yeah, so the installation starts with this pedestal that has a vessel that contains an arrangement of artificial croton and arica palms. And then
what's that?
They're the foliage. There are two kinds of plants that found on the set of the show. So they're recognizable in the video. And then on either side, I have an air freshener, and I love them because they're plastic, but they look like stoneware. And yes, they are motion sensor triggered. So if there's no one in the galleries, there's not going to be any scent. But the one that's on, it's on a 15-second delay. So once you walk past it, it'll spray after 15 seconds, and it's got a really generic tropical scent in it. It's a very synthetic tropical scent.
And then when you turn and look at the big wall, it's almost like a room with three-walled room. It's got a huge video montage of 16. It's a grid of 16 little clips running from the show, right?
That's right. Well, there's actually, it's a 4x4 grid, and then two of the boxes are then also divided in four, so there's 22 channels in all, and then it's flanked on either side by these ready-made photo murals that are beach scenes, so they look, it's like you're there. It's the palm tree and the sand and water on all sides, and then in the center is this sort of bank of, I was thinking a lot about surveillance monitor banks, but it's also kind of a quilt or a mosaic of videos.
Mm-hmm. So when, I was looking at these little clips, obviously you can't look at all of them at once, and you can't track how long they last. So you're kind of grazing. That's how I felt. But there are little things like people leaving a room dramatically or coming into a room, and the way those shows work, they're always cutting to people's expressions and cutting back to other people and their body as it moves away from the camera. So how long is each little clip, and two, how much sorting did you go through to get those?
So each one is 5 minutes. So there's 22 in all, and they're 5 minutes each, but they're made up of individual clips that are usually between 1 and 3 seconds. Some are longer, depending, but usually they're pretty quick takes. I sorted them based on, I wanted to find supplementary footage, so landly sort of establishing shots, drone and helicopter shots, B-roll, shots of animals, shots of the architecture of the space. And then also instances where either the subjects were not aware of the camera because it was hidden behind something clearly, or it was sort of obfuscated, or that they weren't noticing it because it was overhead, or that they were actively ignoring the camera. So you'd see them walk by it but not make eye contact. And so there's about 40 hours of footage that I went through to get those 22 5-minute clips.
Where'd you get your footage?
So it's from 4 seasons of a show called Bachelor in Paradise, which is a spinoff of the Bachelor franchise that had its 4th season this past summer of 2017.
So it's like hotter people.
Yes, and it's a way for contestants that have been on the show to sort of recycle themselves. They come back.
Oh.
So it's all past contestants that weren't successful. And it can be from the most recent season. It can be from seasons stretching back. They put them all on a resort in Sayulita, which is in Mexico, and the show is actually paid for by the Mexico Tourism Board, and they go on dates with each other, and they vote each other off. This particular show is sex-balanced, although 1 week women will vote men off, 1 week men will vote women off, and so sometimes 3 men will show up in a week, and then the next week it's all women showing up, depending on who's going home.
Is it any good?
Good is a really subjective term. I find it to be very compelling. It is definitely a cultural touchstone. I feel like The Bachelor in even just the past 5 years has really shifted. The fandom has kind of come out of the closet. There's a lot of celebrities that are very open about their fandom.
Were you in there when it wasn't cool?
For sure. It wasn't something I really talked about. It was like my secret hobby for a really long time. I started watching it when I was in graduate school, getting my master's.
Who did you first come out to that you were watching this show?
It was really funny because I was living with all men and I was watching The Bachelorette alone in my room, and then I found out that they had all also been watching it. We ended up having a talk about our favorites, and that's when I started realizing that maybe everybody was like that. You know, everybody watches it and nobody's talking about it. Now I have friends who want to watch it with me. That's really new.
Do you care whether it's The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, or Paradise?
I prefer The Bachelorette.
That's the one where
The woman's in charge
of a bunch of men.
I find those seasons to be more compelling, usually because the woman they pick is very charismatic and interesting. At the same time, on The Bachelor, I usually find the contestants to be more compelling than the lead. And so, you know, you're sort of watching, you meet these 25 women, and that's really sort of who you form connections to. So, not so much the lead. He's sort of the blank slate, right, that you project onto.
But within this franchise, you're saying the women are generally more interesting than the men.
Yes, I would say if you look at the Hall of Fame of like compelling characters from the show, they are by and large women, whether that's heroes or villains.
So you watch a lot of telly and then you made a bunch of art about it and it's now in a museum.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting. So after you've walked in, you've seen the air freshener and the video montage, you walk through two walls that are very close to each other, and mm-hmm. on either side there's a big slogan.
Right. So that's part of a larger text piece that has four parts, and it begins on the same wall. Like if you walk in, you'll see false idols, and there's a piece of text next to the pedestal with the air fresheners.
What's that text?
That text says, a persistent squint draws out a diffident gaze. And then the next line, the next two lines are along that narrow hallway, and they go, a collated fate coagulates in fickle ways. And then the third stanza is, blurry, turny, murky, thermy, gurney, returning. And then on the far wall of the apex, it's the last stanza, which is, remember, it's not a process, it's a journey.
Mm-hmm. So I saw some people taking a selfie in front of that last one.
That makes me very happy.
And I suspect it's because it's the easiest one to understand.
Probably. It's also for people who are fans of the show, they'll probably recognize those words. They're used a lot, and they're used interchangeably in the show to talk about the experience of being on the show. The producers really prefer if you refer to it as a journey rather than a process, and that, so I thought that was really fascinating.
Well, hang on, you're saying the fourth of those slogans is a slogan on the show, or just that's just the kind of language they'd like?
It's the kind of language they would like. And if you know, if you watch the show, they say things like, I've changed a lot over this journey, or this has been a really intense journey for me.
Sounds like search engine optimization. How did they make people say particular words? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, a lot of the show in the exhibition in general was me thinking about what is visible and invisible on these shows. And one of the things that is almost invisible but is a persistent character, I mean, the producers of the program are in there with the contestants all the time. They're just not in the frame, which I think is really interesting. And so, you know, there's a way of asking questions. There's a way of manipulating people in various degrees to get the narrative that they want or to get the raw material to make a narrative. And so that is like a constant ongoing process. And often it's a tension between contestants who grew up watching the show. The show's been going on for 18 years. So, you know, you've got, I mean, it's been going on for half my life almost. And so contestants producing themselves is what I'm saying. So they're aware of, they're like trying to do that job and control it, and then the producer is also trying to do that job and control it, and sometimes there's some tension there between what the contestant wants and what the producer wants.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, I mean, a lot of the producers have been with the show for a very long time. Along Gale, in particular, is like a longtime producer. He's very well known. And Chris Harrison, who's also the host, is also a producer, although he's not doing the same. He's not in the same role with the contestants as the other ones.
Mm-hmm. So your text is, tell us how you got it on the wall, because you use a strange font and it's gold and it's sort of not what you normally see in an art gallery.
It's, that font is, I wish I could off the top of my head tell you what it was, but basically I looked up Instagram inspirational quote font. And it is. It's a very particular type of cursive that you see. Instagram is a really, it's sort of the fourth dimension of The Bachelor, because a lot of these contestants go on, you know, they earn a lot of followers, and so then they're sort of living a public life performing after the show is over.
Oh, really?
Performing for a social media audience and often making money in terms of like using, leveraging a lot of followers to sell products.
What kind of stuff? Air fresheners?
Hair vitamins, fitness tea, sunglasses, that kind of thing.
The sort of lingua franca of Instagram is the inspirational quote.
It's also, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in like a suburban McMansion. I grew up in mm-hmm. the suburbs, and it's kind of a common thing to have like a, that's why it's called live, laugh, love. It's like common to have sort of a wall decal that says something, you know. So I was sort of taking from both of those vernaculars, the domestic wall text as decoration, and also like this Instagram aspirational lifestyle quote aesthetic. And then the poem is like an invocation. It's like what, if I could be there, like if every contestant that entered Bachelor Nation like went through me, like this is the invocation I would give them as I like bid them farewell into Bachelor Nation. It would be like this is what I would like you to have.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Hannah Piper Burns. She's a multimedia artist, and her show Venus Retrograde is on now at the Portland Art Museum in the Apex section on the fourth floor. So this piece, we've walked through two pieces now. On one of the walls, there's a big kind of it looks like a tear in the wall, kind mm-hmm. of a splotch. You could touch it. It's like the wall's blistered.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is that called?
That is a piece that's called The Heart, This House, A Palimpsest. A palimpsest is a word for back when the monks were editing books, they'd like run out of space, so they'd erase stuff that was previously written and then write on top of it. And so it's like a text that has erased, that's been erased and rewritten, but there are still traces of the original text underneath. And that piece, the sculpture, was inspired by an anecdote that I read about the mansion where the show is filmed. It's a mansion in Los Angeles that is used about 4 to 5 months out of the year as a set, and the other the rest of the time it's actually like a place where it's a home, a family lives there. So I was reading about how, you know, twice a year the family sort of like packs out, and the production crew comes in and they put two coats of paint on the wall and shoot, and then they put two more coats of paint on the wall and turn it back and leave, and that they'd keep doing that, and they're putting the paint down. And I started counting the seasons and realized there's been 35 seasons, and that means that there's like 150 coats of paint on the wall. And I started thinking about it as like amber, or like what's trapped in those layers, like a way to think about time, because it's true, like when there's 50 contestants a season and you have 30, like, and there's been going for 18 years, that's 1,000 people that have been on this show, and their stories sort of get buried in time as new people come in. And so I wanted to make this sculpture that was sort of like peeling. The idea is if you could like go in and peel back that wall, and it's just all paint underneath. And then at the bottom of the sculpture is a lenticular print. And a lenticular print is one of those shifting images. It's almost like a hologram.
Like you move your head and the image changes.
Yeah, it's like a little animation. And it's from, there's, the show uses a particular dissolve when it is like dramatically cutting between two scenes where the colors really blow out in this particular way. And I've been capturing those instances as I've been watching and cutting this footage because I really love, I think it's really beautiful, and it's this really like cosmic metaphysical transition, and it makes me think about the purgatory of the show. And so it's an image made from committing one of those dissolves to a lenticular print. So it's like five images, but also no image. It's just color and light, but it makes me think about sort of like the energy that's buried in the walls of that house.
Is that in the actual hole, the sort of burst blister that is the mm-hmm. paint peeling?
Yeah, so when I mounted the sculpture on the wall, actually, the lenticular print went on first.
Right.
And then the sculpture went on top of it to sort of reveal it.
So that piece is on a wall, and on the other side of the wall, you know, you can walk around. There's a video screen about the same size.
Yeah, so right? They're the same dimensions. I when I was making this show, I was really thinking about the Apex space and negotiating it moving forward. And so when I found out that I was going to have these pieces on monitors, I knew I wanted to make the sculpture the same size and shape as the monitor and hang it in the same place, so that if you looked at the wall from the side, it would be like a monitor coming out one end and this sort of blast coming out the other. And that monitor that's on the side is part of Your Host, which is a installation that has three video channels and some furniture. I call it a meditation room. It's also got some text on the wall on the back side. And it's a 13-minute sound. And all the loops are 13 minutes. And three channels, and it's the voice of the host, Chris Harrison, kind of guiding you through an mm-hmm. interview or a guided meditation.
So in there are, I don't know how many little IKEA LAC tables, mm-hmm. the $10 tables, mm-hmm. with things on them, roses, candles, something.
Yeah, so there are three side tables and two Parsons chairs. And then the side tables have vases full of fake red roses. That's like currency in Bachelor Nation. It's their economy in roses. And then fake tea lights and fake pillar candles that are on trays. And if you that set dressing was taken directly from images of the studio where the shows that are on the wall are filmed. So if you're looking at the videos, you'll see that they're filmed in this studio that has sort of a setup of brown chairs with same side tables with these pillar candles and tea lights and bouquets of flowers. So I was trying to sort of imitate this talk show studio format. But also, you know, I have all these fake or artificial objects throughout the show. There's the fake flowers and the air fresheners that have a fake coconut scent, you know, coming out of what looks like fake stone. You've got fake candles and fake flowers, and these sort of the LAC tables, which are fake wood. And, you know, for me, I call it synthetic aesthetic, and it's because the show really revels in its own artificiality. And in fact, it's like kind of central to the conceit of the show. It's like what they want people to say at the end is, yes, it was fake. It was all fake. It was all constructed. But the feelings that I had were real. And despite all of this trappings, despite all of the artificiality and the constructedness of my experience, I did fall in love and it was real. And so I really love that kind of push-pull of authenticity. And I wanted to really push that in the pieces.
So when you say they want people to say it was fake, but I had real feelings, who's the they?
The they is the showrunners. So
the producer.
Mike Fleiss, who's the executive producer, creator, Chris Harrison, who's the host and producer, Elan Gale, who's one of the main producers, and then the producers, like the fleet of producers.
Mm-hmm. So how how close in are you? You know, have you ever been to the set, or have you ever interviewed the producers? You know, are you a viewer at home, or have you been sort of underground behind the scenes?
I'm a viewer. I would give anything to see the uncut footage, honestly, because, you know, what we see is so little compared to what's filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And there are thousands of stories that have never been told, because they weren't. And as an editor, and, you know, it's like creating a story, like things, you have to cut things that you love to make it fit the whole. Mm-hmm. A lot of movie editors will talk about that. But no, so I am not involved, you know, I'm involved within like 2 or 3 degrees of
right.
various people on the show. Sarah Gertrude Shapiro, who used to work on the show, lives here in Portland, and she's the showrunner of Unreal, which is a Lifetime show based on her, like she wrote it based on her sort of experiences producing The Bachelor, but it's kind of a hyperbolized.
It's a drama.
It's very, yeah, it's a very.
Or comedy drama, right?
Yeah, it's a very melodramatic kind of character drama. Mm-hmm. I'd say.
You've talked to her?
No, I've actually never talked to her, but okay. I like know someone she lived with. I'm within sort of these degrees.
Right. But you, I mean, as a viewer these days, you can go and spend hours reading comments and, you know, people's opinions online or in magazine articles. Is that where your involvement stops, or you've never really, what have you ever tried to interview the producers or get on set or do any of that?
I'm not opposed to it. I feel, you know, I consider my role as the metaphysical anthropologist of Bachelor Nation. I listen to a lot of interviews with contestants. And contestants, I read like their tell-all books and things like that. I'm very interested in the contestant experience. I don't know if I'm as interested. I mean, I'm interested in the position of the producer and the camera crew. And in fact, part of what I tried to do in False Idols was make the invisibility of the camera visible and the camera person, because there's a person there often. Sometimes it's surveillance, but sometimes it's a person, and remind them that that's a human being. But I don't know if talking to the producers would really be helpful for me in what I'm trying to do. I'm really interested in the contestants. And I'm interested in the host. I would love to talk to Chris Harrison. He's one of my dinner party guests. I understand how television is made. I understand why these choices are being made. I'm really trying to get at something a little more cosmic.
You walk into an art gallery and they're showing crappy TV. I immediately think, oh, this artist is sort of being ironic. You know, look how bad TV is. Whereas we are artists and everything here is better thought through. Did you ever begin like that? Did you ever?
No. If there is irony in my work, it's definitely not there. My work is, I would say, very earnest and ambivalent. Yes, it is ambivalent. But I see The Bachelor at least as a compelling source material. Is it in of itself a work of art? Maybe not. It's a work of cultural production. It's a work of cultural importance. We live in a time where, just as there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, right? The idea of playing purity politics doesn't interest me. You know, we're all in the muck together, and this is the muck that I happen to be in. It's the muck I've chosen. It's the mud puddle that I'm reporting from. I hope it's accessible. I mean, that's what I like about being a person who works with found and appropriated footage and ready-mades, is that there's a point of interest and a point of entry for somebody in a museum that has watched The Bachelor. I'm trying to take that familiarity at that point and use it as a jumping off point and kind of go somewhere else with it. But for me, the great irony in that show is that it's based on failure. And I'm really interested in that failure and kind of poking at it and using it to talk about larger issues of failure and also the trappings of white culture. We think of whiteness often as being neutral, but I do think more white artists should be interrogating white culture.
Do you have actual feelings that match the ones that you think the producers want you to have as a viewer?
I go in and out. I'm very easily emotionally manipulated. which makes watching TV and movies really enjoyable for me. Because when everything is seen at an ironic distance, you don't enjoy it anymore. There's this idea of the problematic fave, where as you start learning about feminist theory, colonial theory, can you enjoy media the same way? And the answer is no, you can't, but you can enjoy it in a different way. There are so many examples, whether that's sports or religion or politics, where we can hold two things at the same time. We can hold that there's all these things wrong with it, but also that it's really compelling and wonderful in certain ways and magical. It can be both.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Hannah Piper Burns. Her show, Venus Retrograde, is on now at the Portland Art Museum in the Apex series through August the 12th. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Andy Warhol looks at screen. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart. It's all.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 12 noon.
KBOO Portland.
I am a media maker. You can be one too. We need more informed listeners to create independent media that matters. For 50 years, KBOO's been a platform for communities who've been shut out.
This is Ramona Africa.
I'm Naomi Klein.
Davey D hanging out with you.
This is Medea Benjamin.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin.
It's given people a chance to learn how to produce, engineer, host, write, interview, and create media that matters to them. We've been teaching radio since we started, and now we want to build a city of media makers. Portland is undergoing drastic changes, and we need to grow to meet the challenges of living here. Gentrification, displacement, media consolidation, and new technologies.
Stand by for the noontime jamboree!
What KBOO is committed to preserving is Portland's activism and creativity, and